welcome to all of you. A particular word of welcome to Advocate Madonsela and her team. We appreciate your presence here at very short notice, but we thought it was important that you come to speak to us about events that took place a week ago. Our Chapter 9 institutions were created so that our constitutional democracy could be strengthened. Our Chapter 9 institutions are independent and subject only to our constitution and the law. The Chapter 9 institutions are obliged to exercise their powers and perform their functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Importantly, other organs of state must assist and protect our Chapter 9 institutions to ensure their independence, impartiality, their dignity, and their effectiveness. No person, no organ of state may interfere with the functioning of these institutions. The public protector is one of these institutions, and you, honourable members, have often made the point that the integrity and the dignity, the effectiveness of the public protector's office is crucial to our democracy. And anything or anyone who tries to impede that should be dealt with. Now, most of us have seen and read in the media of events that took place at the public protector's office. This committee is charged with the accountability of the public protector, and therefore we felt it necessary that we should ask Advocate Madonsela herself to come and tell us exactly what happened. We will not, I must stress, we will not be dealing with the public protector's report. If anyone tries to do so, I will call you to order. And so we will hear from her. And once we've heard from her, I will take questions for clarity, and thereafter I will ask members of the committee to express themselves on the matter. Advocate Madonsela, once more welcome. It's always good to have you with us.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, thank you for the opportunity to address this committee on the events that took place in my office on the 2nd of March this year. We had prepared a presentation that doesn't deal with the report, but that deals with the sequence of events that led to that day. I would like to be advised, Honourable Chairperson, if we can do that. We had just highlighted the events that led to that day, but not the content of the report. As honourable members may note, on the 1st of August, there was a story in the Sunday Times that alleged improper conduct and maladministration by the National Police Commissioner in his personal capacity. On the 2nd, we received a complaint from Advocate Paul Hoffman SC of the Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa and Mr. Peter Groenewald of the Freedom Front Plus, who requested an investigation. On the 3rd of August, I requested SAPS and the Department of Public Works to suspend the lease pending the outcome of the investigation. There were two leases. The allegation was that there were two leases, one in Durban and one in Pretoria. On the 10th of August, both SAPS and DPW responded, undertaking to heed the request, and DPW further indicated that they had suspended the lease indeed and had advised the parties accordingly. on the 11th to the 19th of August, the DPW Director General informed the National Commissioner that the lease was invalid and that a new process needed to start. And the two letters were copied to me. On 25 October, I issued an interim, a preliminary report, which report informed the National Commissioner that I agreed with the decision that had already been taken by DPW to commence with a new process. And the same report was presented to the two ministers of SAPS and DPW. As you all know, on the 31st of October, there was a change of ministers at DPW. And after that, the minister's office obtained some advice on the list and then engaged with me about that. On the 22nd of November, an opinion was given to DPW indicating that the list was invalid, and then on the same day, DPW advised the bank that they were proceeding. You will all know that on the 10th of December, this is what happened, the announcement by the minister. And in December, on December 15, I issued my draft report. In January, I received comments from all the parties. On the 21st of February, I wrote to SAPS in Durban requesting documents for the Durban lease because I had divided the investigation into two. And the deadline I had given to the Durban people was the 28th of February. On the 22nd of February, I released findings on the Pretoria investigation. On the 24th of February, there was a press conference from SAPS. On the 28th of February, I received a response from SAPS National saying that they were not able to meet the deadline to submit documents to me on that day, because the deadline was on that day. That was now coming from SAPS National Commissioner's Office. On the 1st of March, I received another communication from SAPS National, but from their legal department now, saying that I will receive the documents I'd requested from Durban, and I'll receive them on the 2nd. On the 2nd, we were expecting then the documents from SAPS. In the morning of the 2nd, then we had the two police officers arriving unannounced. And when I was first told that they were there, I thought they had brought the documents that were requested from Durban, but it turned out that they were looking for my spokesperson with intention to ask about certain documents. They had a photocopy of the Sunday Times, and they wanted to know if the documents that were reflected as pictures on the Sunday Times with some of the documents that we had in our system. We then gave them a list of the documents, a list that we had given to SAPS. During the investigation, SAPS had asked us what documents do we have in our for our investigation, and we had given them a list of all the documents we had used. So we gave these officers the same list. But we indicated to them that the document list comes from SAPS, so whatever we're giving them is already something that had previously been given to SAPS, and the documents that they're talking about, we would have received them from SAPS. And later in the day, then, the documents I'd requested for Durban, I got from SAPS. Honorable Chairperson, that is as much as I am prepared to say, other than to say that on the 3rd of March, SAPS issued its own statement where they qualified the visit as a raid. We, from our side, just indicated that we had people that came to the office unannounced and asked questions that we thought the South African Police Services already had answers to. Yes, and I also subsequently got a call from the National Police Commissioner, who apologized for what had happened the previous day and indicated that he had not sanctioned it, and as far as he knew, the head of police intelligence had not sanctioned the visit. And thank you, honourable members, and thank you for reaffirming the constitutional status of the office.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate that. Honourable members, as indicated, I'm going to hear you now. First, Mr. John Jeffrey, followed by Ms. Debbie Schaefer, followed by Steve Swart, followed by Dr. Ambrosini, and then Sheila Shopistole, followed by Dean Smuts. In that order, please.
Chair, thanks. Thanks also to the Public Protector for the report, and I think this kind of interaction is important, particularly when there's so much publicity over an event like this. What worries me is and it's not really anybody's fault here, but how the matter's been sensationalised. You know, you yourself, Public Protector, have you know, said it wasn't a raid, it was a visit. But maybe just to get clarity on you know, was it unlawful? I mean, there are other comments I think I'd like to make after I've heard your response, but do you feel it was unlawful? If you felt it was unlawful, why didn't you, I mean, your staff, ask the police to leave? You know, was there any fear, since one of my colleagues had said that your staff were traumatized, I don't know where he got it from, but that your staff were traumatized by the visit, was that the case? There is a report in the Sunday Times it would have been Sunday. Maluleke and Nkuta, that's the two policemen, wanted to grill Madonsela and her staff on who leaked the documents. That's a quote from the Sunday Times. Is that in fact correct or is that incorrect? But can we just get more clarity? And then I'd like to basically make some comments more, I suppose, relating to the media and the issue of the raid. But I just would like to know, you know, was it a raid or wasn't it? I think you've said it wasn't. But did you still feel there was, it may not have been appropriate, I don't think it was appropriate for such a visit to have taken place, but was there any unlawfulness? Did your staff feel traumatized or coerced? Is this Sunday Times a quote that the police wanted to grill you and your staff correct or incorrect? So I don't know if I can just get clarity from those.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable J.J. Jeffrey. My staff has been traumatized by the visit, even though it wasn't a forceful raid. But everyone just wants to know what's happening. Are we fighting with the police? Is the police angry with us? What's going to happen? I'll give you an example. Yesterday, one of the people at reception was receiving some documents from intelligence that were supposed to go to a staff member. It was just the vetting of people. She rushed to my office and says, I don't know what's happening. Forgive me for being paranoid, but I had to give this to you. It is now a situation where I asked the CEO to issue a statement to staff around the country to say, no, everything is fine, we're not under attack, let's just continue to do our work. So it has destabilized the staff. Was it unlawful? Only a court of law can determine that. What I do know is that ordinarily, if you have to be investigated by intelligence, there has to be some kind of authorization, because this was crime intelligence. So I don't know if it was lawful or not. When they came to my office, my staff was reluctant to cooperate. They were reluctant to even give them the documents. My approach to them was, against advice I got from the team, was, We have nothing to hide. What they want is something we've already given to the police. Let's give it to them. That answers the question about why didn't we send them back. We didn't want to create chaos. We thought it was inappropriate. We thought they should have written to us to indicate that they have started an investigation. When I'm investigating an institution, my people don't just show up at their doorstep. I write to the head of the institution, I indicate what I'm investigating, I indicate what the process is going to be, and then my people then start showing up. So I just thought it was inappropriate, but what I did then, we dealt with these people because we didn't want to create chaos. And then starting from there, then we then wrote a letter to the National Police Commissioner, just wanted to know what exactly is happening, and with the indication that in future would prefer to be informed that there is something that is taking place, and so that we can cooperate. Because then it creates, you know, so much chaos and so much gossip around what exactly is happening. Whereas if we all know what's happening, we can contain the situation. I think, Honourable Member, I've answered the question around why didn't I ask them to leave. That would have been rude, and it would have created a further chaotic situation.
The Sunday Times article that they wanted to grill you and your staff, did you feel, I mean, do you know anything about that?
They didn't ask to speak to me, they did ask to speak to my spokesperson and to ask her questions about the documents that they indicated to her that had been leaked to the Sunday Times. Yes.
If she felt that she was being grilled.
She wouldn't have used that term, but it did create a condition of a state of concern, because the gentleman in question, the officers in question, arrived. They are at reception. They asked to speak to the spokesperson. The spokesperson goes there, and then when they start asking her questions, they take me out of a meeting and they say it's urgent. So there was a feeling that she is going to be asked questions about something that she doesn't know about, because remember, the spokesperson doesn't do the investigation. Yes.
Look, I don't want to get into a sort of cross-examination, yes, but I think the point I'm trying to make is yes, I agree it was inappropriate, and hence
yes,
action has been taken. But from what you're saying, I mean, whatever the reaction of the staff was, it basically was two police arriving and asking questions.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to get is, did any of your staff feel directly coerced? Did they feel they had to supply? I mean, they might have been very uncomfortable with the presence of the police. I mean, but did they feel that they were being coerced, or was it more to, were the police polite?
The police, according to my spokesperson, were polite. But about whether you are obliged to answer or not, you have a police officer that is coming and asking you questions. The force of a police officer doesn't come from the fact that he points a gun at you or screams at you. It comes from the fact that he's a figure of authority. I think my staff was caught between me and the police officers, because they immediately came to me, should we answer these questions? My approach was, I don't want to interfere. If the police want to ask you questions, go down there, answer the questions. That was my approach.
Because, Chair, I think the maybe to just make my comments, I mean, my concern is obviously what has happened was inappropriate. I think it was very inappropriate for the police to arrive, particularly at a sensitive, or at a time when a document, a report critical of the police has been released by the public protector, that there needs to be greater sensitivity in terms of how people perceive things. So I agree it was a very inappropriate visit, and I think it's correct that there's an investigation and that those officers are suspended. My concern is, and it's not the fault of the public protector or her office, but is the way this has been sensationalized, the raid, when I think quite clearly it wasn't a raid. A raid implies that attempts to use force, attempts to gain information, through force, involuntarily. A raid is not an unsolicited visit. We do not get raided by the Seventh-day Adventists who knock on our doors and want to try and convert us. You know, they might not be, some of us might not feel they are welcome, but they're not raiding us. I mean, maybe it's not a good analogy. I hope you're not a Seventh-day Adventist. But anyway, I think it wasn't helped by the fact that the police themselves spoke of a raid to begin with. And that definitely, you know, so they're in a sense responsible themselves. But I think my concern is how it's carried on in the media. So the Sunday Times article report doesn't seem to be correct. The Sunday Times editorial 2 days ago, you know, after it's been known, I mean, the Mail and Guardian had clarified the issue of protector visited, not raided. That was on Friday. Sunday, though, Sunday Times editorial is the raid on the offices of the public protector. Yesterday's business day, Mr. Hartley, who's here, so hopefully he would follow the political week ahead. The raid by the police crime intelligence officers on the office of the public protector last Thursday. So the problem is the continuation of referring it to a raid, because it then causes people to, I think, as your staff have done, to but people can then over-sensationalize, see this as an attack on our democracy, our democracy is crumbling, that kind of thing. I mean, there's a number of people who, under the anonymity of the web, send out emails. And so I've had emails from people saying, the Clare Gate raid on the offices, that's from yesterday afternoon, of the public protectors, and this is sort of exactly what we feared. So just really to raise that concern. But I think in short, I do think obviously the police need to respond. And it would appear as though the visit was wholly inappropriate, and it is good that it is being investigated, that those officers have been suspended. But I think it would be an appeal, particularly to the media present, not to over-sensationalize.
Now, would it be possible for Mr. Jeffrey to return the meeting to the committee?
I haven't recognized you, Dr. Ambrosini. I've given you a fair amount of leeway, Mr. Jeffrey. But public protector, you don't have to respond to his final comments right away. I do have a long list of other speakers who've waited patiently. Debbie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think it's rather disingenuous of Mr. Jeffrey to try and say the media sensationalising something that clearly was designed directly to intimidate the Office of the Public Protector and is undermining the Chapter 9 institutions, as the DA has been fearing for a very long time. I do not think for a second that the significance of events surrounding the matter under discussion today should be underestimated, and we accordingly welcome the fact that the Chair has agreed to call the Public Protector here today so we can hear firsthand what happened. And I think it's no such thing as over-sensationalising this issue at all. It is a very, very serious issue. As I said, we have for some time been concerned about the independence of the Chapter 9 institutions. And they are effectively akin to a court of law. So visiting a public protector's office could actually be seen in the same kind of light as visiting a judge in chambers to try and access documentation relevant to a trial or a case. We've also been concerned about people being deployed to institutions to do their master's bidding, and if they don't, then they will not be there for very long. So it is very significant to the DA to see the public protector's decision in this matter, where it is clear that she has made a decision based on objective criteria before her, objective facts before her, in the full knowledge that it would be politically charged. And we wholeheartedly commend her principled and courageous stance in this matter, and performing her mandate in the manner in which it should be performed. But it's quite clear from subsequent events and from preceding the event that the independence is under threat, and Mr. Jeffrey, I really am concerned that he's trying to trivialise the significance of this issue. If the appointed incumbents don't act in a way that is acceptable by the ruling party, they will then be persuaded by using other methods to ensure that they do so. And we have a vital role, in my view, to protect the protector in this situation. When looking at the entire context of events here, as have been outlined by the public protector, it paints an extremely worrying picture. Mr. Jeff Deutsch took action against something that was clearly unlawful. He referred it to the SIU, he referred it to public protector for investigation. In a matter that is costing the taxpayer an additional 75 million rand over 10 years of the lease agreement. Finally, he's replaced by Minister Gwenda Mahlangu in Kabinde, who confirms that they're proceeding with the lease agreement, but has been confirmed by two senior council opinions is unlawful. Now, what I want to know from the public protector is, did this police actually say when they came, it's crime intelligence who came to visit you, what was the crime they were investigating? And the only reference you've made is that they wanted the documents that had been leaked to the media. To my knowledge, leaking documents to the media has never been a crime in this country. So what actually were they investigating? I mean, I would have thought, given the large number of unsolved crimes in this country, they would have more important things to do than to go visiting the public protector and for Mr. Jeffrey's benefit, as opposed to raiding. And I really think raiding is, it's an issue of semantics. The intention was quite clear that the behaviour was designed to intimidate the officers of the public protector. And the fact that we have heard now from her herself that the staff have been traumatised by it, it clearly worked. And I think we need to take very, very significant stance on this matter as a committee as well. And we've got to make sure that we protect the independence of our institutions and that when they act in a way that is independent, they are not allowed by anybody to be interfered with and to be intimidated to make sure that they do not make such a decision again. And I really would appeal that we have to protect the integrity of our democracy, or we're really going to be on a slippery slope to a failed state, and I don't believe that any one of us wants that. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you, and I want to join my colleague in saying that the Honourable JJ's criticism of the press is inappropriate. And I have got the exact words, disingenuous. We must be careful of removing the focus from the issues before us. Now, Chair, as you indicated, we are very clear that the public protector's job is to investigate improper conduct in state affairs. We know it is an independent body whose independence must be protected by organs of state, including the police. And as one of the Chapter 9 institutions, the public protector is central to the development of our constitutional democracy. It is a crucial bulwark against corruption and maladministration. Advocate Madonsela, you have shown commendable fortitude in carrying out your mandate and completing your report relating to that property transaction involving General Chele. This report clearly did not make you any friends, and it is very clear that this raid or stroke visit was not a wanton act by overzealous officers. It was directly linked to your finding. Let's not mince words here. For the public protector to be effective against abuse of power by the state against its citizens, it must be able to carry out its functions without fear of intimidation or reprisal. And you made it very clear that your staff were traumatized and that we, and in particular, find disgraceful that your staff should be traumatized in the way mannered. But Chair, there are additional aspects here. And whilst we as the ACDP welcome the action by the police minister and General Chele in condemning the police's illegal action, what is concerning is if the general had nothing to do with the intelligence agent's actions, it means we have a rogue intelligence unit which is privy to state secrets and capable of undermining other state organs such as the public protector. The question is, how could these police members not know that you had already, that the list you furnished them came from the police themselves? And this, in our view, indicates a very different agenda, and in our view, it is an agenda to intimidate the Public Protector's Office. And we, as members of the Justice Portfolio Committee, are here to give you the assurance, the necessary support and protection you require from Parliament, as to whom you are accountable to, and as an independent institution in your own right. We must express our strongest condemnation at this harassment and intimidation of the Public Protector and members of your staff. And we as the ACDP have already addressed a letter of complaint to the Independent Complaints Directorate requesting it to investigate this issue. Whoever is responsible must be brought swiftly to account, and we cannot allow such action to continue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did not come with a prepared position or speech. in the hope of forming an opinion as one was confronted with the facts. And before I express an opinion on the matter, I think that a couple of premises would be relevant. The first one is the premise of vigilance. We all agree that democracy requires democratic vigilance, and I salute you and praise you, Mr. Chairman, for having convened this meeting. We are exercising our duty of vigilance. As part of vigilance, there is the requirement of preemptive reactions, which may be a little of an overreaction at times. When something goes wrong, and it's a small measure of what goes wrong, you don't wait until something big goes wrong because it's too late. So I think it's important that we are here convened to express disquiet for what happened. But at the same time, I think we need to ask ourselves what happened. Things in the media can be portrayed in a certain way. We are the Justice Committee, most of us are lawyers. We need to look at things from the through the lenses of the law and see what happens. A raid is a situation in which search and seizure takes place. It's either on warrant or without warrant. A raid is usually an unwarranted search and seizure, and as such is illegal. A couple of policemen knocking at the door who come in with consent is not a raid. We are sensitive, and we ought to be sensitive because it's the public protector. I do agree, having heard the facts, that that was an attempt of intimidation. By whom needs to be discovered, and it's a question for future inquiries, whether it was from the higher echelons of the police or the intelligence, or was an individual action taken by a couple of guys on a personal initiative. But it was an intimidation. But at the same time, there is another issue which I thought in all fairness must be raised. In our institutional framework, the public protector is the one who has the institutional, constitutional responsibility of taking on government, taking into the toughest fights, into the greatest measure of confrontation of any organ of society. It is power against power. No, the police deals power against powerless or citizens very often, but the public protector is there where the clash of giants would take place. So I would expect the public protector to be tough, and if need be, to toughen up. And if a couple of policemen come under those conditions, one tells them, get the hell out of here. Come back with a warrant. That's what any citizen would do. And one would expect of a tough public protector to adopt the same stance that I would if a couple of policemen come into my house asking questions I don't wish to answer. Either they're there with my consent and one doesn't complain, or they're not there with your consent and you get them out. Is that defense of rights and positions that we expect of citizens, we expect the public protector to inculcate in citizens? So, in conclusion, I think it's important that we are here to react to this violation, because it is an intimidation. But we need to realize that we are doing so because we are not going to allow even a small measure of intimidation. But let us also keep a perspective of what went on. It was not exactly how some people have characterized, was not the end of democracy. It was a despicable incident, but an incident nonetheless, and we are here to make sure that this is the first and the last, and it doesn't escalate.
Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing me to say a little bit on this issue. I want to congratulate the public protector for being what she is, the way she has behaved
This is the victory of the Women's League. We have always held the position that women can do it. So viva, women of South Africa, viva. I won't entertain things that she did not say herself. She has actually dealt with the situation like a person who is fit for the post. She said with her own words that she did not want to cause sensation. You know, if you are in charge and if you actually know what you're doing, you don't act because so-and-so has done this and sensationalize everything, because you have been chosen in that position because people knew that you can do the work and you are capable of handling such situations. We have always been criticized that, you know, women are put there for affirmative action, blah, blah, blah. This is a living example of the fact that women are there. The ANC puts women in positions because they are giving them equal opportunities, because they are citizens of this country. We have wasted a lot of time in South Africa sidelining women. And I think this will serve as a living example that women must be given a chance in this country. I'm not going to waste my time with words like raid and grill, because she did not use them. She's professional. She's responsible. She didn't use them. You know, when you talk about raids and grills, I was thinking of maybe bacon and egg, something like that. I don't know why people like to put this. You know, where I come from, in the rural, deep rural, Mpumalanga, people are concerned when you know that the media uses words like this. We even worry that maybe the news in South Africa should be reported in Shangaan, so that we don't have these big words that confuses people. Thank you.
Chairperson, you did well not only in convening this meeting so that we could show our solidarity, but you did well also to quote word for word section 181 of the Constitution, namely the fact that the public protector, like the other chapter 9s, is independent, subject only to the Constitution and the law, and what follows thereafter. The point I wish to draw our attention to is that the wording of section 181, with one exception, echoes verbatim the provisions that describe the status and independence of the courts in this country, the entirely separate branch of state. That is how highly elevated the independence of these institutions is. We and every other organ of state have a duty to protect and respect, which is what I hope we are doing here today. We, like every other organ of state in this country, are under an injunction not to interfere with any of these institutions. And now, to me, the interesting question that arises is this. Since you are directly comparable to a court of law as to your status and independence, the single exception is that you are also accountable to us, but only to us. Since you are directly comparable to a court of law, let's ask ourselves, if this incident had occurred at a court of law, what would we have thought of it? I think we would have thought extremely ill of it. And we would have said that that certainly constitutes interference, but it may moreover constitute contempt. And it is the case that under your statute, anything done in connection with one of your investigations, if that thing had been investigations as part of the proceedings in a court of law, would have constituted contempt. And the offence of contempt against the public protector carries a fine of 40,000 or imprisonment of 12 months. Now, even if this is not contempt, and we shall see as the investigation unfolds, then it is surely interference. Whether you call it a raid or call it something else, it is, to my mind, interference. That also carries 40,000 or 12 months. And, you know, may I tell you, Chairman, what I think, what it looks like to me, what is going on here. We know that there is a certain degree of paranoia in let's call them governing circles. There is paranoia about leaks. That much appears clearly from the ruling party's discussion documents as a party. It is frankly and honestly discussed. There's paranoia about leaks. There is paranoia about something called information peddling after the intelligence crisis of 2005-2006. Even one of the counterintelligence SAPS officers who paid you a visit is saying now in the Sunday Times that his telephone is being bugged and he is too nervous to talk. Now let's never forget what the Reverend Frank Chikane said after he left office. We do have a situation in South Africa now where comrades bound to secrecy will divulge information to other comrades as if they are above the law. And therefore we have a problem in this country. Is there a sense on the part of police intelligence, that particular intelligence branch, that they can act beyond the law, that they don't need a search warrant if they decide to go and pay you a visit? It seems to me that they were driven by what has been described in the Sunday Times as an attempt to find out who leaked the documents to the Sunday Times. There is enormous paranoia at present. They were asking who leaked the documents. The answer is quite simply the Sunday Times has had them since last September. You did not leak them. But what are we coming to when an intelligence service thinks that it can go down the road and demand from you to know who leaked these documents? And therefore there is a real problem. I don't know whether the police should be investigating themselves. Surely Francois Beekman should be doing it. And when we have facts and findings therefrom, perhaps then it will appear whether we're dealing with contempt, whether we're simply dealing with interference. To my mind, this is interference, and perhaps the semantics are less important than all that. It looks like interference to me, and somebody should be fined 40,000 or go to jail or both.
Thank you, Chairperson. Public Protector, I'm going to ask you on from another angle. When you look in the past, you know, the mere arrival or presence of a police officer was inducing a sense of fear. And there were songs, ordinary songs, like Kauleza, you might be aware of it. There were also freedom songs singing about the police and the like. Why? Because of the legacy of the past. The question I'm trying to ask you is, trying to look at the way your staff reacted when they realized the police are arriving there. Why? Because now, in the past, when the police arrive, and you will hear people saying, police are looking for you, and immediately you will think that there is something wrong you have done. In fact, people, when police are inquiring, they used to say, you are a wanted person, wanted by the police. But after democracy, I just want to find out whether is that still the case, that if police arrive, person will think that maybe he's in trouble, he has done something wrong, he has broken the law, or this is something of the past. When the police arrive looking for me, I'll say, what are you looking for, and attend to them. That's what I'm trying to find out. Is it because of the past experience, past legacy, that sort of installs some anxiety in your office, your members of the staff coming to you and say, here are the police, they want to talk to you, and the like. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. My first reaction to my receipt of a notice for this meeting, was to myself, why do we need this kind of meeting for? Because I've read the papers. I saw the words raid and stuff like that. But I looked at what the public protector had to say to all of this. And she said exactly what she has been telling us here today. That these people came, they paid a visit, and then they asked for documents. And the answer or the explanation even went further to indicate the stupidity of the entire exercise on the part of those gentlemen who went there. Because she informed them that the documents they were looking for already in any event in the possession of the police. Why should you be coming to us for them? And I learned further that the commissioner of police had taken it upon himself to apologize to the public protector for the conduct of the police. I thought for the stupidity of their action to go and ask for documents that they should have received from their own colleagues in the police force. I know they come from crime counterintelligence and so on, but they are police nonetheless. Now, the public protector in giving a briefing here, until of course she was asked by Comrade Jeffrey if they felt intimidated or anything, she didn't feel it necessary to be telling us here that even the staff members there were felt anxious and intimidated and things like that. Because this is a public protector, one of the most important institutions in the country. I think it's second to the judges, I mean to the courts, in terms of its the enormity of its power. So it can't indeed be intimidated by a policeman who merely comes in to ask for information. It's not as if the police came, as the papers say, raiding with guns almost blazing, doors being kicked and stuff like that. I just hope, Chairperson, that in the course of time, as our institutions become firm on the ground, take root in ensuring that our democracy endures, it's not going to be necessary for us to be requesting them to come and tell us about matters or activities that are under control. Because as I know, as I understand the situation, the police are being investigated, those people, they are being investigated by the appropriate authorities, as I understand it. So this entire matter is under control. Now I fear a situation where we inculcate a culture where each and every moment some of these institutions, Chapter 9 institutions, are confronted by situations where they are being challenged by members of society or even other, because they are dealing with state institutions, especially this one, will be calling on them to come and give them protection. They should be in a position to have the resources to protect themselves, because these are the people that ordinary citizens want to go to when they are threatened, their rights are threatened by the state. I thought I just should make that kind of comment, said that I want to commend the public protector in the manner in which she handled the matter. It shows that indeed, even though it's our responsibility to ensure that we give them protection, but she is able, in terms of her office, to stand on her own and deal with any issues that come before her. Indeed, I want to agree with Jeffrey, Honorable Jeffrey, that the picture that has been painted by the media is not what has actually taken place. It's exaggerated and sensationalized and misleading.
Thank you, honorable members, and thank you, honorable chairperson. Most of the feedback that I've received is just comments, and firstly, I do appreciate the fact that You have taken the time out of your busy schedules to deal with this matter. And secondly, I do want to indicate, which maybe I may not have indicated in my opening remarks, that I did appreciate the fact that the National Commissioner, when he called, he did condemn this as something that is improper and that is something that shouldn't have happened. I think from his side he didn't take it lightly. He did think that it was something inappropriate and that's something that shouldn't happen. And honorable members, I do also, I am grateful to honorable member Sithole, who has basically affirmed the office, and all the other members. I appreciate what you've said. I think the office is impartial, is independent. At this stage, the decision that I have made and my team has made is that not to draw any conclusions from what happened. And what we did was to cooperate. Yes, honorable member, honorable Ambrosini, you are right. We could have asked them to go back and bring a warrant, which some staff members, because the institution is full of lawyers, and I indicated when we started that my staff members wanted them to be sent back. And my approach was, doesn't really matter, we have the documents, give them to the documents. So we operated, as they would say in the defense, comply and complain. That's what we did in the circumstances. But we didn't want to encourage such behavior. And as a result, then I immediately wrote to the National Commissioner of Police indicating this has happened and I don't think it's inappropriate. But I must also indicate that his call came before he received my letter. So it's not as if he responded to my letter. He, from his side, had already thought that it was inappropriate that this had happened. I am not going to speak on behalf of the media about whether they sensationalized the matter or did not, but I'm glad that honorable members are aware through you, honorable chair, that my office has never used the word raid on any given day. The first people, according to my communications team, that used this word raid was the spokesperson of the South African police on national television on the day the story broke out. So we didn't use the word raid, and we've always stuck to the facts that these people did arrive. And I think what bothered my staff was not only the fact that they showed up, Honorable Jeffrey, it was they showed up in the middle of an investigation. So it's not as if we had just concluded the report, we had written to KZN requesting documents. Instead of receiving a response from KZN, we received a response from National. And then National says, we'll send the documents. And in the morning, when we're expecting the documents, these people show up. And only later, towards the end of the day, do we get our documents. So I think it wasn't that people felt intimidated by the police. It was a feeling that you can't then investigate without having people, shadows behind you. I think that was the sense of it. And I am glad, though, that the South African Police Service are taking care of the situation. And which brings me to the question that has been asked by Honorable one of the honorable members, was the question that, are we afraid of the police? I'm sorry, Honorable Sibanyan. Are we afraid of the police because of the past? I don't think my staff is afraid of the police. Actually, until now, the South African Police Services have been one of the most helpful people in terms of Section 181. When we do provincial work, we always rely on the police, and they always, at every public interface that we have, they sit there with us, they answer questions, they provide security, etc. So we've had a very good relationship with the police as in their uniform. Actually, my staff is not afraid of them. They regard them as colleagues and as partners in ensuring that we strengthen democracy. I think in this case it was a sense that my spokesperson is not here, but if she was here, it was a sense that there was a sense that the documents have been leaked to the Sunday Times. We've come here to find out if he had the documents. Almost there's a nexus between the fact that the Sunday Times has documents and you having the documents. That was the storyline. They had a copy of the Sunday Times. Here are the documents. We want to know who leaked the documents. And do you have these documents in your... So that was the uneasiness about it. And the question was, they have the documents at SARS, and if there was a leak, couldn't it have come from SARS? Because we also got the documents from SARS. But also coming to ask whether we have the documents or not was strange. I mean, my spokesperson keeps saying it's strange because they would have read the report, and the report indicated what documents we relied on. And SARS had requested a list of these documents during the investigation, which they had the same list, so they would have known. I must commend those SARS for the immediate action that has been taken on this matter. So we will just want to see that we put it behind us. My office is allowed to continue with the investigation into the Durban part of the lease agreements, and we conclude this and we're able to work with SARS as we have worked before in some of the security requirements we have when we visit the provinces. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. If you'll allow me just a few comments. I would imagine that in the public protector's investigation of the leases, her communications with the South African police and the Department of Public Works would have been by way of written communications, perhaps telephone calls, emails. I do not see a situation where the public protector's office would march on the headquarters of the South African police. I do not see a situation where the public protector's office would march on the headquarters of the Department of Public Works. And likewise, the national commissioner would have responded in writing or via telephone calls or emails. And this is what we expect of other organs of state. And so when we read or heard in the media that there was this visit of sorts, let's stop calling it a raid, it certainly invoked in me a sense of outrage. Because I said to myself, why could they not have picked up the phone and said to the public protector's office, do you have these documents? Have you leaked them to the media? Can we get together and discuss this? Could they not have put down a written communication to the Office of the Public Protector? And so while I agree with many of your sentiments about this matter, these are just some of the questions that remain unanswered. And so we should send a clear message to all organs of state that the injunction on them and on us to assist and protect the Office of the Public Protector, to ensure their independence, impartiality, the dignity and effectiveness, that must be upheld. You cannot simply get up one morning and say, okay, let's you and I go to the Office of the Public Protector and demand these documents. It's not on. The sense of outrage, we note, is shared by the National Commissioner, and we welcome that, It is shared by the head of crime intelligence in the South African police force. We welcome that as well. And it is shared by no less than Jackson Tembu, spokesperson for the ANC. And we welcome that as well. Now, whether this was an attempt at intimidating the Office of the Public Protector and her staff, well, perhaps the investigation will ascertain that as well. And so we look forward to the end result of that investigation. But it is disturbing that her staff members feel insecure and vulnerable. And so we would like you to take this message back to them, Advocate Madonsela, that they can count on us. We can't be there physically with them all the time. But there's this wonderful Zulu expression, kululeka. So, whilst some of you may feel that today's discussion or briefing has been a bit of a waste of time, do forgive me if you feel that. I did feel that it was important, if only not necessarily for Advocate Madonsela herself, but for the other people in her office to understand that they are not alone in this. I want to thank you again, Madam, for appearing before us. Just one last thing, by the way. I'm curious to know how the investigation will determine whether Section 7, Subsection 2 and Section 9 of the Public Protector Act has been infringed. I believe it has. But as you say, Madam, that is something that a court of law must decide. But I thank you. I thank you and your staff for appearing before us. We're most grateful at such short notice once more. I thank you, honorable members, for your inputs and everyone else who was here today. And that brings us to the end of today's meeting. We're adjourned.